Welcome to London, by the way.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with my cold. And I think the summer looks like it's going to start.
I hope so. We're getting a few rain-free days now, which is nice. Well, you're with us today because you've got a new solo album out, Fierce Heart, which you is your best ever. Why?
Well, it's 130 in the chart in America this week, and the single's at 32, and that's a long time since I've been in the top 100, so I guess you must judge it by its reaction. You know what I mean? So at last I can say, well, you know, there you are. It must be pretty good.
Is it just because of the chart position that you think it's a good album? I'm sure it must be for other reasons.
Oh, sure. But, you know, people do tend to judge stuff like that. So I can turn around and reverse it and say, well, there you are. It must be good. It's happening. No, I like it very much. A, it's unusual in the aspect that it's much more work with Steve than I've ever done. He's only ever done sessions for me. He played a bit of keyboard. Like on Love Hurts, he played some keyboard. The bulk of the keyboard was played by Jean Roussel, which is the keyboard player with Cat Stevens for years. But yeah, he's, you know, it's much more of a production help from him on this album, which makes it different. And
you mentioned Steve Winwood. Now, this is really the first time the two of you have worked together since 1974.
Yeah.
And he actually co-produced this album.
Yep.
And has, in addition to Jean Roussel, got that very distinct Stevie Winwood keyboard sound that he has on both his solo albums that have come out recently.
Yeah. You can hear it in the solo.
When you recorded the album, how much of his influence did you allow him to put on the album? Because there's a lot of him there. Did you just say, look, you've got a free hand, you do whatever you want to do? Or did you say, look, I want a little bit of this and a little bit of that?
On the tracks we worked together, that was basically, it was very free, very open, like Living on the Edge and That's Love. I mean, they are my songs, the melodies are there. It's pretty self-explanatory, the thing, but as Steve played the bass on the Moog and also the main chord sections on the Moog, you know, we didn't use anything else other than him and myself. You know, I mean, I just handled percussion and the vocal part. Van Morrison did something on one track, acoustic guitar. They were very simple songs, and it was just basically Moogs and percussion.
It was an album that was recorded in several places, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's some tracks with the band, which I've been working with for the last 4 or 5 years, the Contenders, which are quite interesting. They bring a better energy to the album and the tracks that need them. You know, some tracks, you can't just use Rhythm Box and Moog all the time, you know. Synthesizer's okay and you know, Rhythm Boxes are okay on certain songs, but other songs need to breathe and need to move. I think that's a big problem, and it's a pity today with a lot of records where the kids, they want to use the sound of synths and Rhythm Boxes, but they don't know, in some cases, that it doesn't suit the song they're doing, but they do it anyway.
Because
so it's got this mechanical pendulum, and it doesn't go in, there's no feel.
What?
Feel has really disappeared quite a bit, so I'm very wary not to overuse mechanical rhythms. I mean, you can only do so much in mechanical rhythm, can't you?
You
have a bit of feel. Yeah.
Although you're remembered from Traffic by a lot of people, I know that pushes you back to the early 70s, if you like. It's a time that I know you remember very fondly. You're not remembered as the lead vocalist. Obviously, Stevie was the main vocalist.
And drums, I played, really.
Yeah.
And lyricist, though.
And it wasn't until that you actually started out as a solo artist that you began to take up singing as a lead vocalist, wasn't it? Are you pleased now? I mean, you've obviously...
Oh, yeah. Well, I think everybody knows me in England as much as Traffic as Love Hurts, which was a big hit. And it's true, people remember you from your last sort of stuff, don't they? And I guess a lot of people would first say Love Hurts. Oh, yeah, I know him from Love Hurts. And others would say, oh, yeah, Traffic. And
well, that song was big, but it was bigger for another band, wasn't it? Nazareth, I believe, made that song a big hit in the States.
In the States, that's right. Well, there were some very strange reasons why mine didn't do what it was predicted it was going to do in America by a lot of people. It was going to be a top 10 record, but that's the way things happen in the business. You know, you can sometimes fall foul of certain things. It's not your fault, so I didn't really get the chance. But, yeah. I had the hit here, and they had it in America, and I think I had a couple of other places around the world, but you know, people realized I was a singer then, but I was a singer before Traffic, really. You see, I used to sing in a band, and then drums were another thing I used to like to do, which is very came natural to me. I was always bashing around. So I went full circle when I started to do the first solo album in Traffic with Oh How We Dance.
That was an interesting album. I would pick up on that for a moment, that you used the Muscle Shoals musicians on.
That's
that
right,
one.
Yeah.
Now, you've used different musicians on all of the albums. I wondered whether that experiment was the one you enjoyed the most, using some very established American musicians.
Yeah, that was very interesting for me. I learned a lot. Good experience. And they then joined Traffic after a while, augmented, you know, with the rhythm section. But they're legendary, you know, they cut Percy Sledge When a Man Loves a Woman and all that early stuff, and a lot of people. When you arrive there in the airport, a little tiny airport, you know, instead of seeing like in the showcases, you see like parts of cars or engines, or as you do in other major cities, you know, or you know, places in America, you get in there and in the little sort of glass cases, they got gold records in the airport, you know, because that's what they're famous for. So it was quite a thrill to do that. But I think they've got very big studios now. They're very, very, very big. They've all produced top artists. They've all branched out and become really big producers and very sought after now. You know, that was earlier days. But
we're coming up to the present day now. Fierce Heart really does bring you into the 80s because of the sound that you make. Although you made the comments about some of the newer bands today and the way they use drum boxes and rhythm machines and synthesizers, you have used those instruments yourself, but have managed in some ways very successfully.
Try to keep it within, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you'll get away with you. It takes over if you're not careful, you know. I was working with a rhythm box in 71, you know. I wrote the track I'll Always Be Your Fool off a very early primitive rhythm box, and a song called Goodbye Love, also off an early album I did. But then I didn't, not being a keyboard player, I didn't get too much further into and being a drummer, you know. I only used it to write with. Then I found that you could use it on the albums, the actual track on an album, finished for an album, if it had the right feel and the song was a continuous rhythm. But if you have a song that's not continuous and a lot of momentum to it, the rhythm box lets you down and you can't, you know what I mean? The Bell Stars have got that old Tamla Motown song out of, what was the original band? Oh, it was a great song, what's
You
it
Can't
called?
Hurry Love?
No. Oh. That was Phil Collins. The Bell Stars got that. It was an old Tamla Motown. Mm. Something, oh, I forget what it's called.
Well, it'll come to it.
But, you see, I can hear the rhythm box holding it back, and it's weak and wimpy. Mm. And when you don't use a rhythm box right, it becomes a wimpy, weak rhythm. And I hate anemic, sickly kind of weak rhythms, you know. I like strong rhythms. Maybe I'm just being a drummer. But I've always liked Michael Jackson's rhythm tracks. They're so powerful, you know, on Beat It and on Billie Jean. It just pushes you along, you know. And I'm very wary not to fall into a trap of using that box, where it's actually killing your feel, you know. You've got to get the maximum.
Because
it's there and it's easy to use, you know.
Yeah. Well, that album, Fierce Heart, the new one that you've recorded now, as we said, it's been recorded in, I think, three different studios. Why did you choose that? And is it easier for you to do it in different locations?
It just worked out that way. Mm. I'd done some tracks with a band up front before going to Steve's house, which he's got a 16-track. And I'd already cut demos and stuff that was usable. And then after finishing at Steve's, he was into other stuff. I had to then finish it off on my own, you know. So I needed more time. Mm-hmm. And I just went to other studios. I mean, I did quite a bit of finishing on my own, you know. Mm-hmm. I think he actually totally recorded and mixed and finished about two tracks at the house. And that was Living on the Edge and Tonight You're Mine. And the rest I finished off in other studios. It looks like a lot of different places, but it's not so complicated. Mm-hmm.
Well, aside from the album, now, you have a very interesting life aside from music. You're associated with Brazil quite a lot these days, flying backwards and forwards. Your
mm-hmm.
wife, I understand, is Brazilian.
Yeah.
And you now have two children
mm-hmm.
and spend half your life there and half of it
That's
in
right.
other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's very interesting, actually. you know, living in another country is interesting to begin with, and a place like Brazil is really different, you know. And of course, the football is, football and music is the two great things. And I'm a football, you know, fanatic. I know all the football players. I know more that players there than I do in England. I mean, I never really had a chance to really meet football players in England. You know, I know Garth Crooks, Chris Hughton, through their friends with Kenny Lynch, who I met through various, you know, other people. But you don't get the chance to see the kids in England. They get the chance to meet the players, and you don't get this family feel in England. It's a pity, really.
Is it maybe because in Brazil and countries like that, football players really come from rags to riches, as in the case of Pelé, and because they're very much street level people to begin with, they never lose their roots, and maybe that's why they're more accessible to the general public.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's true. But it's not so much that they come from low financial backgrounds or more of a poverty sort of situation. It's the whole country, you see. It's much you know what I mean? The communication, and they'll practice at their club, and it's a club membership, family membership that I'm a member of with my kids and my wife. I can go there. Kids can do swimming, ballet, judo, gymnastics, tennis, water, whatever. You know, it's open. And, you know, you get family membership of each football club. They're all open air because the weather's so great. I know it's not the same and it's difficult like around Arsenal. I went around Arsenal the other day and I was talking to Terry Neal. I didn't know who he was, you know. He didn't know who I was. I didn't know who he was. But I was saying I'd like to leave a message for Tony Woodcock, who I'd met in Cologne. And I was saying, and what do you do? How do you come and see the guys and hang, you know, watch them practice? And, you know what I mean? I realized, of course, it's not that loose. He said there is a visitor's gallery where you can watch. And I was thinking to myself, it's so sad, this difficulty of real closeness. Because I think the kids benefit from it in football in Brazil because they're so close. You'll get Junior, Zico, the kind of guys from the selection, who do little beach games on the beach with a big crowd of people certain days, or they'll hang out and play in these little very local, like say the lads from the radio station here, you and the lads say there's a place nearby where you pay so much money and you all have a little get together and you play regularly, so like a Wednesday and a Tuesday, and you book the place. It's a small half-size pitch and you have a few beers and you book the place, and that's your day, and you play regularly. See, that is a place called Caxingalé in Rio, and it's like the TV Globo people play one day, or the musicians play another day, and I used to go regularly and play there, right? I've done me legging as well, but you see, now you'll get Mourinho, and you'll get the top guys who occasionally go up there and hang out and play. I mean, you never get this, it's a shame, you know? I don't know why it's a little bit more stiff in England. You know what I mean? And you feel the players are a bit stiffer. I've been told, I had it on good information from a first division player, a friend of my brother's, who said, quite frankly, that like the B team or the smaller reserve team can sometimes be treated so without, you know, any, you know what I mean, without any feel at all. And I think we suffer from, that's the only thing. They're not born playing better football than us in Brazil. You know, I walked into the first club, which I'm a member of, in Fluminense, and I watched, the first thing I saw, I was my mouth dropped open. I was just amazed to be there. I met Revelino, Paulo Cesar, Carlos Alberto, all the great players, because they were in that team at the time, 76 it was. And they were practicing shooting the ball over this wall. You know, it was a wooden thing in front of the goal. And I thought, I'll bet you no one's ever even bothered to do that in this country. It's a simple thing. You put a thing up, and the guys, the lads, just practice hooking it and swerving it over the thing. I mean, they're not born to kick those great kicks. Because when they're anywhere near the box and they get a foul, that's like a penalty to Brazil. I mean, you see, and I thought, well, that's so simple. Why can't we open up a bit and learn? Which is what I've learned in Brazil and living abroad. You get different angle on things as you would.
Well, aside from football in Brazil, I guess you've gained a lot of other influences for recording and writing, particularly songs and theatre parts, from your life. Both with the Brazilian wife,
yeah.
Also living there.
Well, I've yet to record there, so you haven't heard the real Brazilian influence on the album.
But
so
some of the
songs are... One song is a Brazilian song I put English lyrics to called Don't Let Them Control You. And funny enough, last week, talking about football and Brazil, Pelé, you know, I have just got to meet recently, because he's been away in New York a lot. I've never met him in Rio, but I've got this shirt that Revelino gave me of the 78 World Cup, and they all signed it, and the only one I didn't have was Pelé and Falcão, which he plays in Rome, you know. So I met him in New York, because he's with Warner's, my company, and it was, we had a great time. And then I left, and last week I went to Stockholm, to Sweden, and as I arrived, they said, oh, Pelé's coming in, he's with the FIFA organization deciding about the World Cup, you know, trying to get in America. And they had Kissinger, they'd managed to get Kissinger, and they got a little meeting together to try and persuade FIFA. So I went up into the room, they said, you know, before the meeting, it's great, you know, he's up there, we can go and have a chat with him. And they bought some balls, and him and Beckenbauer, they signed the balls, and we met again, and he said, oh, he said, great to see you. And,
did you talk to him in Portuguese?
Yeah.
Because you're now fluent in that language, aren't you?
Yes, I was, well, doing okay, you know, not bad. And I said, is Henry Kissinger not here? Is he around? And they said, yeah, he's next door. One of the American guys in the Soccer Federation. He said, ah, no problem, I'd get him in, you know. So he went door and got Henry in. So I gave him an album, put his name on it. I forgot the doctor, I just put to Henry Kissinger.
I'm sure he got nice.
And he came in, great little bloke, very calm, very nice, jacket off, you know, and he stood there, we took pictures.
Well, it doesn't look like they've succeeded. It looks like the cup's going to be played in Mexico.
Mexico. The Brazilians are very hot on that, because Joan Havelange, who is the chairman of FIFA, is a Brazilian. And I can tell you from inside information from Pelé that there were some very hot moves going on. That it would be in Mexico, which is better for Brazil. Mm. It's a shame, because I think Mexico and Brazil are being economically in the state they're in. Football should take a second seat when it comes to real economic problems. Maybe. And America was the country to stage it, and to bring America into the World Cup. Two great things should have been, I think, in America.
Well, maybe they get the chance in 4 years' time.
Maybe they will. Mm. But it would have been nice to have brought them into it.
Yeah. Well, again, back to you as a recording artist, as opposed to fanatical football supporter. Now, aside from recording your own albums, you're also quite interested in production. You've worked with the Dutch band Solution,
yep.
And I guess you'll be involved in other projects in the future, won't you?
Yeah. I'm producing my brother with a Brazilian song, which is by a black Brazilian funk artist. It's a great, great track. We're getting it released, I think, this summer. I think it's going to be a disco hit. It's really a strong thing. I did English lyrics for it, and I'm doing that, and his band, they're called the Front Room Band, is his mate. They just play in the front room up at home, so that's the Front Room Band, you know. Mm. And an old friend of mine, Raymond Froggett, I'm meeting him actually this week, and we're going to sit down and see about if we can't produce something together too.
Mm. Now, you come from the part of the world where Raymond Froggett, Lou Clark, ELO, The Move, all those
Move,
bands
yeah.
came from.
Yeah, that's right, I'm here in Birmingham, Worcestershire.
Do you look back on those days with fondness and nostalgia?
Yes, I do. Great days. Great bands and great musicians came out of that area. Well, even now, Dexter's Midnight Runners. You know, the really good, different quality bands come from that area for me anyway, yeah.
What about the future for you, Jim? I know you've said that you'll always like to be involved in writing and recording music, but are there any other things up your sleeve that you'd like to do?
Well,
apart from playing football?
Yeah, I'd like to travel quite a bit, actually. I would like to, I'd also like to study a lot more. I'm very interested in archaeology, as in historical archaeology, you know, and I'm reading a lot of books lately, I find, about, you know, archaeological finds near Addis Ababa. The Lucy skeleton, it's like 3.5 million year old. I've always been fascinated by either archaeology or space astronomy, very much. It's difficult, isn't it, as a hobby it's great, but then you've got to be well off enough to just lay back and do a hobby, and I mean, you know, you've got to keep the wolf from the door, which never seems to stop, you know, especially with a couple of kids. But I could while away my hours up in Wales, I have a little cottage there, and just read,
What about touring? Now, you said earlier that you've still got a sort of semi-regular band that play with you on albums. Is there any plan for you to go on tour?
Oh, yeah. We have had offers for my first time a solo tour in America to support either Hall & Oates or the Bob Seger band, which I may go out with one of those two in July, which would be exciting, or August. And that would be a great introduction for me in America. Yeah. And then next year, Steve and I've said to Steve, look, when you go out and do your first American thing, what would be more perfect than together, you know? And obviously, somewhere in the evening, we do a Traffic song together. Mm. I think that would be a sellout tour, you know?
Because he's going out on tour this summer in Britain, which will be a welcome return. Done anything.
Well, he
like
started in Italy this weekend, I think. Mm. He was coming to Rome as I left. I was there the day before yesterday, and he was starting the weekend.
What about the rest of Traffic? Do you keep in touch with Chris and Dave?
Dave I spoke to 3 or 4 weeks ago. He's playing in Hawaii. He loves to keep gigging. He's got an independent album coming out. He's had a few troubles and problems, as always, with managers and companies. He's a bit of a rebel, Dave. But Chris is getting involved in the studio, I think. He's just taking it very much easier than the rest of us. Chris, he's got some studio involvement, and I think he's just working on stuff at home, you know.
And you're going to carry on yourself?
Me, I'm ready to hit the road in about a month, back into it, you know, which is, I got to get in shape. I know David Bowie's been boxing every day to keep himself. Because we don't realise the energy you put out when you go on the road and you play, you know, you really play. You're not playing with tapes or titivating a synthesizer.
So I mean,
you know, the band.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use some tapes. Yeah. I am going to actually try and incorporate some stuff off the album where the drum box sounds as a particular sound you wouldn't get from a drum kit. So I'm going to try and incorporate tapes somewhere in the show.
When does that start and where are you playing?
I'm going to kick off in July with about 3 weeks in clubs around America. One 2,000 seater clubs. And then it's either going to be the John Hall & Oates gig or with Bob Seger.
Supporting him.
We're just in the throes of seeing what would be the best thing, you know.
What about Britain? You've taken care of America. What about coming back to play to some of your British fans?
Yes, very much I'd like to play. I was gigging occasionally up until I think 1980, 2 years back. I did the venue, which was very good. And I supported Kansas one night at the Odeon, which went down great. And I was just disappointed we weren't able to you know, put in a proper tour, you know. Now it's obviously this is going to be the album to tour with, you know. Everything's come right, everything looks good.
You've also got a lot of material from previous albums.
I see. That's one good thing I'm glad about. I've got that under my belt, and the stage show is actually very up. It's very exciting. I've got I can choose the best of those interim years, and like even a couple of things I did in Traffic. I do a new version of Los Sparkle High Heel Boys, an acoustic version, which is on the cassette. It's not on the album. It's an extra track as a bonus on the cassette. I think it's on a 12-inch in England, actually. And it's interesting, you know, to go through those different periods, and they still stand up, and some of the songs are very good. We've got a lot of rock feel into it, heavier rock than people think, you know. I'm much more heavier than the and maybe they think from some of the records like Love Hurts and things.
Well, good luck with the upcoming American dates, and I, for one, will look forward to seeing you playing in Britain.
Thanks, it's been great having you.